All right, this is Wayne Messick, and I'm the publisher of iBizResources.com, and I want to welcome everybody to today's call. Now, each of the interviews that we are conducting, of course, are available and brought to you at no charge, with the, you know, the stated objective of helping each of us become more effective communicators. We record the calls, as we're doing now, and put them on the Center for Coaching website, along with and in part of the five keys to strategic conversations, so that you'll be able to refer back and forth between the calls themselves, the real life examples in the case studies, and the evolving strategic conversation work. So if you're on the phone right now listening live, you know, just note that we are recording this and we're keeping it on mute so that we'll have a clean recording. We may have people, you know, international callers, and we don't know. So we want to make sure the recording is as clean as possible. Don't worry about taking notes, of course, especially if you're driving, because that digital recording will be available on the website by this time tomorrow for sure. And I will give you that specific address at the end of today's call. Now, today Henry Barbet and I are interviewing Douglas Cohen of the Leadership Institute. Now, as most of you probably know, Henry is a highly trained business coach with more than 20 years experience in business development, marketing, and communication. He also holds two advanced degrees from Columbia University and is an adjunct professor at New York University School of Continuing and Professional Studies. Now, Henry is truly passionate about behavioral analysis and helping individuals improve their personal and interpersonal effectiveness, which is why he persuaded his good friend, Doug Cohen, to be with us today. So I want to say welcome to Henry, formally. Welcome, Henry.
Hi, Wayne. Thank you. Hey, and thank you for all that wonderful introduction and sharing with our listeners today the resources that we have available. Now, Doug, I assume you're with us?
Here I am. Glad to be here.
Perfect. Hi, Doug. Well, we're delighted to have you. What I want to do is I think we should just get right into the interview now with Doug, because it's about 5 after the hour. And I want to begin by saying that I've known Doug for many years. I think, Doug, it's got to be about 7+ years we've known each other now.
That's right.
And I have been a fan of Doug Cohen and Doug's work for many years. I have tremendous respect for his knowledge and experience in the arena of human behavior and interpersonal interactions. Doug is the founder of the Leadership Center. I know, Wayne, you had said Leadership Institute. Okay. That's where Doug went to school. But he's the founder of the Leadership Center. And I want to begin by just giving our listeners a little bio of Doug's background. Doug is a professional leadership and coaching consultant who has over 20 years' experience helping organizations incorporate better business practices into the daily workplace. Doug has coached both individuals and teams for corporate clients such as Amdocs, Shell Chemical, AT&T, GTE, U.S. West, Arthur Anderson, Prudential, Bayer, BOC Gas, Molson Breweries, and ABB. Doug consults with organizations based upon a fundamental belief, and that belief is through great leadership, it is possible to shape the character and quality of each interaction, both in the workplace and in the customer community. Doug earned his master's degree in applied behavioral science from the Leadership Institute and holds a undergraduate degree in psychology from the Evergreen State College. He is also a member of the Organizational Development Network. Doug, welcome.
Thank you. Just to be with you all?
Well, we are delighted to have you, as I said at the top. Doug, I thought it would be good to begin with you telling us a little bit about the work that you do with individuals and organizations.
Sure. And I have a consulting practice that has been going on for about 18 years. And I've had multiple affiliations, as you noted, working with both consulting companies that have primarily corporate clients. But in the last 7 to 8 years, I've crossed over into additional sectors of the nonprofit and the world of public administration. And so I've been actually testing the methodologies that we'll be talking about today across beyond the corporate solely business sector into the world of child welfare and human services, as well as in the initiative that many people have to start nonprofits is based on, you know, they're taking stock of the world that they see around them and saying there's a service or an organization that needs to be born and I'm going to do it. And so I have a number of clients in the last 7 years that are the founders of cause-driven nonprofits. So a lot of my coaching and development work is around them and their leadership.
Interesting. And, yeah, go ahead.
The one thing I can say that ties all of this work together is that my career for all of, you know, these 2 decades has been centered on helping others to bring themselves as an instrument on behalf of their organization's mission and the effectiveness of that organization. So it really is looking at individual members and leaders of organizations as instruments of effectiveness.
Tell us more about that.
Well, the traditional definition of organizations is that, you know, there's an organization chart and structure, and, you know, organizations do a pretty good job of deluding us into thinking that that they are those structures. But my, you know, belief and my teacher's belief that I've had teachers that have informed me over the years make it very clear that really we're talking about human systems and human cultures, of course, are at the heart of any organization. And therefore, the use of self is the strongest, most powerful tool that we have to bring effectiveness to our organization.
So organizations, the old model, if I'm reading what you're saying correctly, the old model is that the organization structure really is what they thought was the most important thing, and what you're saying is it's the human systems that are more important.
Exactly. And so,
go ahead.
I can think of the conversation and the art of productive conversation as the real driver of performance in an organization, and who is at the heart of that human conversation, but the individual that has an intention and can lead with their intention in bringing themselves to whatever task is before them. So that's really the work that I'm focused on, is helping people get clear about their intention and to then encourage them and provide them with a toolkit to lean into and drive conversations for productivity and performance that they're really in charge of.
Very interesting, and that certainly is a new model.
Hey,
you know,
Henry,
for many organizations. Yes,
Henry, this is Wayne. Let me just say to Doug, I found this incredibly interesting. As you know from our conversation the other day, I work with family businesses, and you know, rarely, no matter how big they are, they're kind of slow on those organizational charts. I remember one time a few years ago, when I really had to force these two brothers who had been in business for like 25 years, had to kind of force them to create organizational charts independent of one another. And the irony was that each one left the other brother off the chart, which, you know, was a perfect example of where the dysfunction was. That by creating that chart that they never had, helped them identify, or helped me at least to identify, that, there was a little bit of a problem there on the human side. So
yes.
I just thought that was interesting that you would bring that up, because it is all about the human side, whether you're in business as a for-profit or whether you're in business as a not-for-profit.
Sorry. Well, I just would want to balance out that example, though, making sure that, you know, those of you that are listening that are in formal organizations or you have your own company, whether it's a coaching practice, it is absolutely critical to establish clear job descriptions and division of responsibility in organizations and teams, and the use of those organization charts and tools. got to leave them and enter into the world of clarifying and meeting each other in our own understanding and perceptions of who's got what part of that chart and where is it going to leave off and where are we needing to be dependable to each other in regards to carrying out the duties associated with those job responsibilities.
Right. You know, Doug, I appreciated the word when you said become instruments, that individuals kind of make themselves into instruments for interactions. Tell us a little more about that, what that means, what that would look like.
Sure. Well, one of the things, since I'm aware of the focus that you have on strategic communications and the conditions and the domains of them, that I thought might be useful is to go over what I think each of us can carry into a key interaction or conversation. And I want to describe what I'll call learning guidelines that can serve both one-to-one interactions as well as group and team interactions. And I think that individuals can bring to an interaction of any size an attitude and a set of a stance towards the interaction that's comprised of what I call these learning community guidelines. And the first one in that, under that heading, is the spirit of discovery. So I'm in charge of my attitude when I enter a conversation. I may be a little concerned or defensive about what may come out of it, but I can still bring a spirit of discovery, being open to learn something new, not only from the other person, but maybe to be open to, that I bring something new to the conversation. So I need to be open to a spirit of discovery, even in myself. Hmm. And I think there's nothing more powerful than human curiosity in interpersonal communication. So with any subtle or any hint that we have that there's something we want to follow up on in what another is saying, if we bring our curiosity to bear and pursue that clue that we just heard or that thing that triggered an interest in us, I think it's very powerful to demonstrate our curiosity by going after what we want to hear more about from another. So those are two examples, the spirit of discovery and curiosity of the learning guideline.
Okay. Fascinating. And, you know, as you were talking there, I was thinking about, you said that we may even surprise ourselves. So, you know, what I'm getting from that is that when we're in this interaction with this spirit of discovery, we're open to maybe looking at our own thinking in a different way or our own attitudes in a different way. Is that correct, Doug?
Yes, and hopefully we are.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take stock of ourselves and seriously get the opportunity that we have when we're engaged in a key interaction with somebody, we can't assume that the old self that we brought into it is the only one that can show up there. I want to bring myself as new to the spirit of discovery and to what's possible for us to create together, because I actually believe that human beings change one another. A deep, you know, the true relationship and a true spirit of community, and in both organizational as well as in personal life, implies the idea that we can change one another, we can influence one another. And it's important that I bring that possibility to an interaction with you or somebody else that I'm having a key interchange with.
Well, Doug, for someone to be able to do that, maybe one of our listeners later on today is going to be in an important conversation and wants to bring that spirit of discovery, what guidelines would you give them to step into those shoes for that interaction?
Yeah. Well, one thing that comes to mind is to recognize that all of us are pretty attached to our perceptions and our belief that our view of reality is the way it is the only way things are. And that it's holding that in suspense. So simply being willing to open myself up to that, hey, I may discover, or be influenced by something else that I hear. And I can dissolve one of my own fixed pieces of my own worldview, which in some people's understanding is called the mental model. being willing to have our mental models be challenged and be open for evolution. So I hope that's saying something to you, but there's a body of knowledge from organizational learning that includes this notion of a mental model. And it's to be able to grow and evolve as a person, we need to have ours be malleable.
Mm-hmm. I know that many people often, when they're in a serious accident happens or some kind of a traumatic event happens, and people are in that state of being open to kind of new thinking or new learning.
Yeah.
But you're saying that we can learn to cultivate that type of state where we're willing to be open in a conversational sense, and that willingness, that openness, can be transformational.
And you know, that leads me to just add on to the learning guidelines that we started with a little while ago, because if you consider that each of us has to evaluate, what degree am I taking responsibility for my own success and the success of the enterprise I'm a part of? And if I'm committed to my own and the enterprise's success, then I recognize that in each interaction I enter into, I am 100% responsible for my part in making that successful.
Mm.
I'm not halfway responsible as me and him. I'm 100% responsible for my side of it. And that gives me the opportunity to lean in and to say, I'm going to give this interchange, this interaction, this key or strategic conversation, my all, because I'm 100% responsible for the result.
I love that. That to me creates a big shift. If I go into every conversation saying, I'm 100% responsible for being understood, I'm 100% responsible. Percent responsible for understanding what other people are saying, but that creates in my mind, it creates a different way I'm going to be in that conversation.
Yeah. And of course, we all live with the consequences of people bringing less than that to typical interactions. And in a organizational setting, a very common one is a boss will deliver a task or a set of expectations to a subordinate or someone that they're working with on a project team. Mm-hmm. And they'll believe that they will have communicated effectively what they wanted or expected, but that individual may have some question or something that they're not clear about, but neither of them checks it out, and they part.
Uh-huh. And there could be all kinds of misinterpretation, misunderstanding as a result.
And what often happens is that the boss or the senior person believes that he or she did convey what they wanted, and they fail to do something that's very, very simple that I can recommend as a technique of interpersonal effectiveness that helps us all close the loop in a conversation, which is testing for understanding. Where before I leave you and close out our interchange, I'll ask you to play back for me your understanding of what you've been assigned or asked to do or what is expected of you. And we get to test right then and there. It only takes 30 seconds or less than a minute. We get to test that there was a true reception of what I wanted from you. But if in the absence of that, I'm at risk, and when I take that extra step of testing for understanding, I ensure that we both have gotten the most out of the time we've just spent.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting. You call it testing. We, in one of our five principles of strategic conversation, we call it feedback for clarification, which is the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same principle there, and very important. Well, I have a question, Doug. You know, for our listeners on the call today, you know, if they adapt this spirit of discovery, they adapt this curiosity, they show up to their interactions with 100% responsibility. Is that enough to transform their conversations, or do they need the people they're conversing with or interacting with to have this understanding?
Well, I think there's always the need for follow-up. human relationship is a complex matter, and that I think you're going to get a lot of mileage out of adopting some of those principles and practices from their own side. So I would certainly say that there's going to be benefit and results from simply that. But to recognize that it doesn't end there from that one interaction, I got to build on and follow up and continue to be leaning in to the dynamic between me and that other person. I may let a little bit of time go by, but I'm going to want to go back to them. I'm going to want to follow up, whether it's an email or a call or just confirming that, hey, I'm here, I'm paying attention, and I want to continue to stay current with you.
Right. That makes sense. Doug, how about in situations where there are highly charged emotions? It could be a couple of people working together that don't like each other and they need to interact, or it could be, a situation where there's just a lot of highly charged energy. What do you do, when you're coaching people or working with teams where these highly charged elements are present in the room?
Well, and this is the real world, right? This is where the rubber meets the road of all the skills and theory and concept of interpersonal effectiveness and this whole realm of being, interested in using yourself as your instrument. Clearly, there's a step that precedes going further to address one of these highly charged situations, which is to create the context and to create a safe space for addressing it, which means you have to speak into the truth of the discomfort that's going on. You have to name it. And in a business setting, it's most useful to accompany that naming by saying, there are some consequences and there's some fallout in our business performance to what's happened in the interpersonal static that has arisen between these people. So you name the human dynamic, but you also accompany it with saying, let's look at the fallout or the consequences to us in what we're trying to achieve. So that validates why do we need to address this and not let it, continue to exist or simmer without being addressed. So you have to speak into that. And often it takes asking people, would they, be willing to step into a safe place and to address this high tension that's going on. And that takes what I call a leadership act, to intervene in the very common reality of interpersonal tension and say, it's time for us to address it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I certainly like your naming it the leadership act, because it takes courage, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, what I often have said is that there has not been a single fatal case of being uncomfortable. People are afraid in organizational life to address the uncomfortable energy between others, themselves and others, or between others that they observe. And yet, it's not fatal to address it. We always survive it. We can get through it. But we have to be willing to bring it up and to enter into that and say, for the sake of all of us where we're going, this also has to do with a certain attitude or philosophy in business. I believe it's also a powerful leadership stance to say we are all in this together truly. Mm-hmm. And if I believe we're all in this together, then I want to go into whatever is necessary for us to work in and through to get to the other side. Mm-hmm. So it does take courage.
Mm-hmm. Doug, does there need to be, supposing I take this, this thinking of kind of naming the discomfort that's going on, setting a context for, I'd like to, to discuss this. I'm coming back with, if I were to use these strategies with a boss, my boss, for example, who is not aware of these things and just kind of, is not really skilled in interpersonal reactions, could I be setting myself up for, being ridiculed or having the boss say, get out of here?
Yeah. Well, certainly we're not in charge of everyone else's capacity or maturity in dealing interpersonally. And so it is important to assess someone's readiness and how much is it worth taking the risk of addressing this with somebody. bring myself, get over that hump and bring myself because it's important enough to me that I want to get this out on the table with somebody. Then the next step I need to do is be willing to be patient and listen and let that person come forth with their story and to realize that there's probably something in their story that I didn't know. And that's where that spirit of discovery comes in. I may think I have them pegged. Like I know them, I know their patterns of interaction, reaction. But if I'm patient and I get them better context and get them to tell the story, it's highly likely that I'm going to learn something that I didn't know. And that's the payoff. That's the value of being willing to bring myself to that person and get them to tell their story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm as you're explaining it, I'm beginning to really get a clear sense that if one, even going to a boss, for example, that is not particularly skilled in interpersonal communication or interested in his subordinates' issues, you know, in terms of talking them through, that if I can, you know, arrive with that kind of courage, in many cases that courage itself could be respected and change the dynamic right there in the relationship.
And hopefully it is. Now, what territory that we're talking about with your question in this scenario has everything to do with organizational culture. And I can divide organizations into learning and non-learning cultures. And there's an interesting formula that I've learned and been practicing for many years. I mean, clearly you need to assess if you think, you know, if it's such a closed non-learning culture, am I going to get anything out of bringing this up with that individual? But then, and so I may avoid it for a while. But then I have to ask myself, how is this culture going to shift from being a non-learning culture to a learning culture? Well, somebody has to make a move. Somebody has to risk bringing the issue up and naming it and bringing it forth to another. And that's up to us. If we're willing to risk that, and it's worth it to us to give that a try, we actually can shape the future culture from a non-learning to a learning organization. And that's really in the spirit of the work that I've been doing for now 2 decades. I get up every day on behalf of helping people cultivate and shape learning cultures in their organization.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I mean, it's truly transformational work, the work you do. Transforming people, how they interact, how they see themselves, and how they view their interactions.
It can be, and when it goes well, it really is.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would like to hear, Wayne has tremendous experience in family-owned businesses, and those can be, Wayne, some of the most challenging environments for interpersonal reaction. I'd be curious about your questions for Doug with regard to the application of the work he does in the family business environment.
Yeah, I've been making a lot of notes. I have probably more questions than I had when I started. But you mentioned that, you know, being uncomfortable is never fatal, and of course that's true. However, I think that there are probably people out there who would disagree, and not literally fatal, but if that boss has over the years developed a non-learning culture that they got from, you know, their predecessor, and the boss is your dad or your uncle, and so you're now in this organizational culture where you're perhaps afraid to name it, you're afraid to tell the story, you're receiving these mixed messages. How does one approach that, where you're really even perhaps afraid to go through what we found to be a very simple process, and that is, you know, the feedback for understanding loop. How can people get beyond that fear? Because it is true that, you know, effective communications will prevent conflict, will uncover misstated expectations and will help people develop shared goals. But when these people are in these long-term, everlasting kind of interdependent relationships, how can you get them over that hump, if you will? Are there techniques that you use? Are there examples that you present that give the young people, and young is a relative term, the courage and the matriarch or patriarch, the willingness to to change?
Sure. Well, you make several good points in the presentation of that challenge. So I can a couple of things occurred to me in response to it. First of all, I'm not an advocate, even though I am a true believer in the power of creating organizational learning climate. I don't advocate that people go forward and commit political or organizational suicide by going against the culture and trying to address something with somebody that you know. There's literally no chance. So I understand those dilemmas. There is an alternative, which is to find an ally. In interpersonal dynamics, there's a formula that has to do with triangulation. And if I have an issue with you, Wayne, and I go to my friend Jack and just process my complaint about you with Jack, it's unhealthy if I don't come back to you and try to work it eventually out with you. But on the way to dealing with somebody that I have an issue with, if I go to a third party that I believe can be an ally for us and I let them know what is going on with me and that I'd like their help in being a sounding board or thinking through or giving me their perception of the person that I have an issue with, I've mobilized myself first from simply being isolated and not dealing with it. And I've availed myself of another person that I can use as a quote-unquote thinking partner. And I might even solicit that person to, go to the person that I have issue with and check out their stance about what's going on and be an intermediary for me. But it demonstrates that I have taken action and I want things not to remain in the status quo and that it's important enough for me to address it that I think it needs to get named and get on the table. So it's the use of an ally as an intermediary that can be helpful, as long as it doesn't stay between me and the ally only. Eventually, it obviously has to go back to the person that I have the static or the conflict with.
That is amazing. That is very good. In my experience, the successful family businesses are typically made up of at least three generations, one being the founder, the senior generation. The next generation are people who are maybe 10 or 15 years younger than them who are in significant management positions. And many times those people are not part of the family, but they are certainly part of the fabric. And then you've got then that third generation, that successor. And we've often referred to that process is as bridging. Where that successor perhaps would talk to the senior level manager, but who knows their dad from a years of being in business together, to get a sense of where they think dad's coming from as a sounding board, if you will, as you said, and as a thought partner. I mean, this is great. And in many kind of cases, those people become, as you suggested, an intermediary. So I think that's that's excellent because it and of course in many companies people go to mom, but then that has all the other implications that can actually exacerbate things. But having an intermediary who's in the business, who has the same objectives really as the successor, meaning that the business continues successfully, that's a great great insight. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that, I think that Go ahead, Doug. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think whether or not, you know, people's setting is the family-owned business or more traditional organizations, corporate or otherwise, this pattern of triangulation is extremely common. In fact, it characterizes interpersonal relations in many places, that we often are going to another to deal with the issue than problem we have rather than direct to the person. And it's really, it's simply delineated like this, that it's healthy triangulation if I go to somebody else and get prepared and get clear and get my message straight so I can go to the person I have the issue with. It's unhealthy or dysfunctional triangulation if I just keep it with that person as a complaint and I bolster and strengthen that dialogue with somebody else, and I don't go back to the individual. I just leave it at that because I don't believe that I'm going to make any progress here. And organizations are littered with these triangles.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And I mean, I can picture several situations where, unbeknownst to me, that was what was actually happening. I didn't think of it as a process. I thought of it more as a just a happenstance. But I can see how that would be an ideal way to in many kinds of interdependent relationships. So now when my daughter comes and says, "Hey, Dad, what do you think?" then I'll know that the next step is she's going to take those great ideas and then go to her mother with them. And
what you owe her is the encouragement to go back.
Yes.
So be a sounding board, but if we have a rule in de-triangulating organizations, which is I'll take you two times, and if you come to me the third time without, and I check with you, well, did you go back to Sally? And if you haven't gone back, I can't talk to you again about it until you go back to Sally and deal it up. As they say in Canada, time to deal this up with the individual.
Mm-hmm. Doug, I assume that these principles that you have outlined today on this call have application to people's personal lives as well as their professional.
Yes.
They've been universal.
Yes. They work throughout systems that are necessary in our personal, private lives or our organizational lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, Doug, this has been a fascinating time together, and I've learned a lot. I was aware of the kind of work you did, but I've learned more in our time today, and I'm sure our listeners have, you know, their minds are probably percolating with ideas of these powerful concepts and principles. So I want to thank you on behalf of Wayne and I. Thank you very much for joining us today and sharing some of your insights on human dynamics.
You're
and
very
applications.
Welcome.
Hey, yeah, I just want—I don't mean to jump in here, but before you leave, Doug, I wanted, to say thank you myself, but also, if the listeners want to find out more about you or get in touch with you or find out more about your work, what would you have them do?
Well, I'm certainly linked in with the Center for Coaching as terms of a reference there, and I have a website that's called the Sustainability Leadership Alliance.org.
Sustainability Leadership Alliance.org.
.org.
Great.
Well, that's great. So any of the listeners that would like to communicate with Doug directly, go to that website. And Doug, you have an email address as well. Do you want to give that to the listeners?
dacohen77@gmail.com.
Wonderful.
Great.
So if anyone would like to communicate with Doug directly, you know, Doug would invite you to do so. And then at this point, Doug, I think we're just going to say thank you again. And, you know, we would like to see you join us again in the future.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Good luck with your series.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Doug.
Bye-bye.
Wow. That was great.
Well, Wayne, that was a tremendous interview.
That was great.
And much food for thought for our listeners. And I think we can just kind of touch on some of the things you know, that he named, which is the spirit of, you know, coming into interpersonal interactions with this spirit of discovery, you know, this expectation that I'm going to learn something here, that this is an opportunity to discover something maybe about myself and something about the other person. That's a tremendous, a powerful concept. The second principle he said was curiosity, which is kind of ties in with the spirit of discovery, but a little different. It's about, you know, kind of like a child, you know, childlike, this childlike wonder of, you know, curiousness about what's going to happen, what's going to take place. And then the third one, which to me is a very powerful one, which is arriving at a conversation, taking 100% responsibility for being understood and for understanding.
Well, you know, that's the one that got me right there, is the 100% responsibility. I mean, that is such an important thing that you can't use the old, it's not my job. We each are 100% responsible. I think that was powerful.
Yeah, no, very, very powerful concept. And, you know, you arrive and, you know, therefore, you know, you're responsible for being understood and making sure that your message is getting through to the other person. And it's your responsibility for checking your understanding of the message that's been conveyed by whoever you're communicating with. So taking those extra steps, which is so rare, you know, in the average communication, it's such a rare step that people take.
Yes,
and, you know, as I always say, most communication is really misunderstanding.
Right.
Because people do not check their understanding with each other. And this kind of ties in with the five keys that we have of strategic conversation. And, you know, as we discussed on the call, that feedback for clarification ties right into this checking for understanding, where you feedback to the person you're communicating with your understanding. And then it gives them the opportunity to say, well, yeah, you've kind of got it right, but this is another piece of it that I really meant.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, setting the context. I mean, we've all seen how that works. And Doug, I mean, you know, we know that strategic conversations is an interpersonal communication skill. You know, that's designed to produce valuable, clear, meaningful conversations for, you know, personally and professionally. And of course, now you know, we've seen that from Doug's insights that it's more wide ranging, perhaps than we had initially thought. That was great. I'm glad you you know, got him to take the time to be with us. That was great.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure. Wayne, how about talking about, for the benefit of the listeners, what we have coming up next month in July?
Okay, now, everybody should mark their calendar for Wednesday, July the 19th. What we're going to do is we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to be interviewing someone, a professional, a CFO, chartered financial planner, who has been a part of a business group on the phone for well over 2 years. And so what we're going to be discussing with her and looking to her for are some practical, valuable insights that helped her during the time that she was actively involved in the group, and then things that continue on with her today. So I think it'll be a kind of a change of pace, but it'll be very interesting. And so now, if you are part of the announcement list, then you will, of course, be receiving an announcement in advance. If you are not, then I would suggest that you go to strategicconversations.com, or you go to the Center for Coaching in the community area, and you'll find a way to opt into the announcement list. That way you'll make sure that it's, you know, on your calendar. And also, don't forget that if you go to centerforcoaching.com, click on the community link, and then on the link to the interviews. You do this now, like tomorrow, this time. By then, you'll have this call in its unedited entirety posted on the website, along with previous calls, which is what we always do, so that you'll be able to listen to it, fast forward, listen to the important points that Doug made when you have a chance to write them down, because it's the integration of the strategies that Doug talked about that I think will make all the difference. So before we sign off, we're at 47 minutes after the hour. Before we sign off, Henry, do you have any final thoughts for us?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, just to let our listeners know that our mission really is to create a learning community on interpersonal communication. You know, we've come up with the name Strategic Conversations, but our goal is really to create a think tank, if you will, a research den where we can come together on a monthly basis and, you know, interview thought leaders on interpersonal communication and also discuss, you know, what are key principles. You know, there, interpersonal communication is one of these topics where everybody has an opinion of. You know, some people may say, well, you've got to be an active listener. Other people may say, well, it's really being sincere, that's what's most important. And our goal is to really interview and speak with people who have a lot of experience in the research end and the practical end of, you know, what are the elements of strategic conversation, so that our listeners and ourselves, you and I, Wayne included, that we can all really gain insight into what are the most important things for, you know, our relations with others, which we could say may be the most important skill set that any of us possesses, our ability to communicate effectively with others. That could be the most important skill that we really develop in our lives. So, you know, our bigger mission is really just to create a community where we're going to learn together and grow together in terms of becoming better communicators.
Well, great. I guess with that being said, let's say goodbye to everyone and encourage everyone to join us next month and to make sure that they're in the loop by being part of the announcement list at Strategic Conversations. And thanks for taking the time, Henry, and I'm so glad that you were able to get Doug's time for this, because it was very enlightening, I think. Very, very enlightening. Really neat to, you know, to hear a real practitioner, a real academician, a real person who's really out there on the street using his tools for effective communication.
Great, Wayne. Thank you, and to all the listeners that have joined us, we look forward to having you join us on the July call.
Great. All right, guys.
Goodbye, everyone.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.